Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want to contact us, send an email to psychologypathwayspodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. So, Aurora, I'm pretty skeptical of some of the podcasts that I listen to. I mean, they're all selling their coaching services or their online class. You know, they're selling the book. They're selling something. Yeah. It seems like there's always an upsell.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have sponsors. And so I don't know if I believe in their nutritional supplement because they're sponsored by that team.
Yeah.
They have affiliate marketing. They are, you know, they have, if you click on this link, I get paid.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're selling coaching. I mean, the only reason they have a podcast is so you'll hire them to be their coach.
They're selling their services. They're selling them. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always an upsell. And so I think it's time for us to just put our cards on the table, because I don't know that I have an upsell, but I do have a motive. So what about you, Aurora? What is it that you actually want?
So I mentioned before in other podcasts that I am a first generation student. I totally floundered in school. So I had no idea what I was doing. After being an advisor for a while, I go, oh, wait a minute. It's not just me. Most people have no idea what they're doing in college because this is your first time at bat. So I just want students to not miss the memos that I missed so blatantly in school. And so I want to spread the news as much as I can. Now, there's also, I did write a book, but that's not the big thing. I would love to do public speaking. So I would love to be the keynote speaker. So if you are organizing any conferences, I'd love to, you know, talk and just really spread the word as much as I can, whether it's to other students or to advisors, to just talk about what I've learned while I've done what I've done.
We talked about that in the first podcast where we talked about how our reach is so limited by the number of appointments in the day.
Yeah.
And I think that for every helping profession, whether it's doctor, lawyer, social worker, psychologist, advisor, there comes a point where you want to reach more people than you can in just the people that you see in your own office every day.
Yeah, I feel really limited, and it breaks my heart that I know that I meet and I come in contact with other students from other, you know, other scenarios, other majors sometimes, and they go, wow, I never knew that. And so I never want a student that I meet with to say, oh, my advisor never told me that.
Yeah.
And so I know that I can't meet with all students, but if I can kind of widen the net as much as possible and let them know about all the things that I totally missed the memo on. So that's what I want to do this podcast for. And plus, it looks good for me in the department.
Yeah.
Let's get
so
serious.
True. Shameless self-promotion, I call it.
That's right.
But it's true that every nutritionist, every exercise guru, everyone that has clients and then one day they realize that they have a message to share, they're going to write a book.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be on the speaking circuit, or they're going to do a podcast. And so I think
absolutely.
I had the same experience as you. And since podcasting is so hot right now, it occurred to me that we can actually reach more people at our own university and maybe even beyond if we just have conversations about these things that come up all the time.
Yeah. So what do you want?
Well, I want you to buy my book.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
But I think I have the same motive as you in the sense that I've had these conversations for 15 years on the faculty. And
yeah.
So many times I meet with a student who says, wow, I never knew that. And I actually ended up building a class with advisors mm-hmm. on career pathways in psychology. And so, sure, I would love it if our students at our university would take the class, because that's where I put everything that we know about how to get a career.
It's all out there.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. It's all out there. And sure, you could buy the book, which is the textbook for the class, but I'm keeping the price down because I'm not trying to take your money. I think really at the end of the day, what I want is to add value.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to have to digress for a second, but think about this. In the country right now, there's $1.5 trillion in student debt, and it's almost insurmountable. And colleges are spending huge amounts of money to retain students and to advertise and to keep enrollments high, because it's getting hard to be an institution of higher education in the country right now, just financially, because mm-hmm. of the demographics of what's happening and because of the competition. And I know that at our university, the one thing that we can do that a lot of universities aren't doing is to figure out as a department, how can we add value to your experience right here at Kent State University. And in order to do that, we've done a huge amount of things in terms of having our advising in the department with professional advisors to have a class on how to get a job or how to get into graduate school. We have our peer mentor program and our local chapter of PsyChi. We've done a lot to revitalize our undergraduates' experiences. And this is just one of those things. The podcast is a way that we can add value because, as we discussed in the first podcast, it's portable.
Yeah.
You know, it's practical. It's ideally, it's fun. It's
palatable.
It's palatable. Yeah, I was doing the alliteration thing, although I'm sure practical wasn't in there. And it has good reach. And so if there's any way that we can add value so that when people come here, or if they're listening from afar, they feel like, okay, I'm learning some things I didn't know about how to get into graduate school, what kind of mindset to have to approach my major, how to capitalize on all the things that a psychology major has so that I can then be successful. That's really my motive because, like you, I wasn't a first-generation college student, but I had a lot of, you know, pivots and barriers along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned, it took me really like 30 years to figure out, hey, this is what we're doing.
Oh, I don't feel that bad. It only took me 14 years.
And so, yeah, last fall was the 30th anniversary of my heading off to college.
Oh, wow.
It's been quite a journey, and I feel like I'm that kind of person that can only meet with a certain number of psychology majors each year.
Yeah.
And so in order for me to broaden my reach, you know, I really don't want to be on the public speaking circuit that bad. I'm not trying to become a celebrity.
No, I don't want to be a celebrity.
No, I get it. But there has to be something we can do to add back. And from where I sit, a podcast is one of the easiest ways that we can really get the word out about how to be successful. And I think that is our tagline, isn't it? We help busy psychology students succeed.
Absolutely.
I'll never forget my very first honors thesis. It was probably 2004 when I had just gotten to Kent State University. I think it was my second year. There was a student who was pre-law, but a psychology major, and she wanted to do an honors thesis during her senior year. But the problem was she didn't really have any internships or research experience that was that related to psychology because, you know, she was trying to move on in law.
Right.
And so she ended up just knocking on doors, you know, going door to door up and down the hall saying, can I do an honors thesis?
Aw.
And I said, yeah. You know, I was impressed that she was assertive and she asked for what she wanted. And I think one of the biggest ways to get what you want in college is to go and ask for it.
Oh, okay. It's just that easy.
Well, maybe not that easy.
I mean, it really depends on how she phrased that. She really probably had to put a pretty good spin on it. What did she say to you in order to get you to commit to that? Because that's a pretty challenging thing for you.
Yeah. In hindsight, I'm sure she didn't just say, give me honors thesis. I'm sure it was more a more nuanced approach than that. And it was probably preceded by an email. And I do remember that since she was pre-law and had done experience in those sorts of environments, that she was pretty professional, actually.
Okay.
She was dressed for the role, and she didn't just walk up and say, you know, hey, I want to. And she'd just email, you know, the one-sentence email, could I do an honors thesis? Because I get 100 emails a day from, you know, people in various countries that would love to transfer money now that their husband is deceased,
oh,
and if
perfect.
I could just send them all my information, you know, so there's something about actually approaching your, you know, assertive ask in a tactful way.
Right. So she didn't just come to you and demand.
No.
Okay. No demand. And it was professionally asking you a favor.
So I guess the flip side of assertiveness is professionalism.
Okay.
And I think that that's something that all psychology students can learn more about. And I think that that's very important. And come to think of it, there's a lot more psychology students than faculty, a lot more honors students than faculty. And we can't say yes to every honors thesis. There's just not enough of us to go around.
Right.
And so if you want to be the person that gets the honors thesis or gets the internship or gets the research experience or passes the audition when you're interviewing for graduate school, a little bit of professionalism can go a long way.
Absolutely.
How professional are the students when they come to meet with you?
You want me to be honest with that?
Probably varies.
It varies. But I would say a majority of them are coming in as just like, let me get this over with. It's a box to check. It's mandatory. I have to come in. Some of them are super professional.
Okay.
And also carries over into emails. When students are emailing me, it'll go from totally basic one-liners.
Yeah.
To
text message.
Yeah. Will you, with just the you, do this for me? But then also the emails that are like, dear Miss you know, Alexander, will you blah, 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 blah. Could you please help me? Thank you so much for your time.
Now, do you notice?
Yes, I definitely notice. Do I treat either one differently? No, but I definitely notice. It greases the wheels a little bit easier if somebody is saying, I know you're super busy, but could you please check on this for me?
So part of your professionalism is being respectful and polite, even when students are not.
And because they don't know.
They don't know.
Understand. And so actually a portion of my job, and I don't want my paycheck to be based on this, but somehow it lands on the lap of an advisor. It's helping and coaching students to understand professionalism. Even though they're a student, people view you as a student, but you don't want them to view you as a student. You want them to view you as a professional.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a mind shift that students, and I went through this as well, even in graduate school, I remember applying for positions for internship and for jobs too. I remember kind of talking about myself as a student, and my faculty advisor kind of pulled me aside and was like, do you see what you're doing? You're talking about yourself as if you are a student. I go, well, I am. I don't know what you mean. And he goes, no. Nobody wants to hire a student.
That's true.
They want to hire professionals. And it was this total mind-bending shift, looking through a completely different lens that I didn't even understand that I was doing. Even though I was totally professional, I was still viewing myself as a student.
You know, there's a book about how to get a faculty job, and that is the thesis of one of the chapters, is that hiring committees hire colleagues, not students.
Mm-hmm.
And so you must adopt the identity of a colleague if you're going to get one of these highly competitive faculty jobs. But bringing it back to our psychology students, you know, what can we do to be professional or to work on our professionalism skills? And I recognize that if it's class, maybe you're going to, you know, waddle in your flip-flops and your graphic tee, and nobody cares.
No.
But when it's time to get something that you want, you know, when you want to combine that assertiveness with professionalism so that you get a positive response, you know, advisors notice, staff notice, faculty notice, your colleagues notice, aka students. You know, it's funny because I actually address a lot of my emails as colleagues. You know, I don't even like to say students. I say, okay, colleagues, because I want to promote that idea.
Yeah.
That we're gonna be professional. And it's not stiff. It's just a way of showing respect and getting past some of the things that you can do wrong, you know, when you're communicating and asking for things. So I think the first thing that I tell people to do is to get over your fear. You know, a lot of students are not interested in talking to the faculty because they're scared.
Right.
And do you get any of that?
Oh, they're terrified. And so we even on our website for advising in the department, if somebody is requesting a faculty advisor, we even have a mock email. And I actually go through the email and say, this is what you should say. It should be short and brief. You should address it like this. And then if you don't hear back, this is how you respond. You email them again, be very polite. And so I kind of, again, coach them through in reaching out to a faculty member. And I go, very rarely does a student ever reach out. And they do actually really enjoy like talking to students.
Yeah.
It's a break from their day, from their research. But a lot of students don't reach out.
The number one time that students talk to professors is before and after class.
Yeah.
And no one goes to office hours, it seems. And I get that. People are busy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons we're doing a podcast is because I don't anticipate that people will be knocking on my door all the time to hang out. And that's probably good. I got things to do. But I agree that if you're going to be assertive and you're going to be one of those students that takes advantage of the faculty, and you know, and keep in mind that there's a reason that people went into the teaching profession. You know, we're here because we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so most faculty are nice and not scary, and you should say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I would probably say is that you should know your audience. You know, the number one rule of communication is knowing your audience. You know, who am I talking to and what am I talking about? And for that, there's a metaphor I like to use where, you know, psychology professors are somewhere in between your real estate agent and your doctor. You know, because your real estate agent, they work on Sunday. You know, they will call you around the clock. They want to meet after hours.
Mm-hmm.
You can text them.
They'll come over to your house. They'll bring you paperwork at 10:30 at night. Yeah.
Yeah. They're on their way over.
Yeah.
And they've got the, you know, offer form because they're going to make money if you do business. Mm-hmm. And so they will chase you down. But your physician, you cannot call your physician. You can call your physician's office.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot email your physician.
Right.
You know, you can email your physician's assistant or, you know, the person that works in the main office.
Right.
Maybe not a physician's assistant, but you can't get to the physician. And the reason is that they have a caseload of, I don't know, 3,000 patients.
Yeah.
And they just don't have time. And I know some exceptions to that. I have a friend who's a physician who puts his cell phone number on his business card.
Wow.
And he hands it to all his patients.
Wow.
I was amazed. But he said no one calls unless they really need to.
Wow. Okay.
And when they do, I'm glad that they did.
Yeah.
But that's the exception. Generally speaking, a physician is kind of behind some layers of filters so that you can't bother them because they're very, very busy and they have a huge caseload.
Mm-hmm.
Well, professors are kind of in between. You know, on the one hand, we have a busy teaching schedule. We have a lot of research to do. We have a lot of meetings to go to. We're not just around hanging out. But on the other hand, you do have access to our email and our phone number, and you can get in touch. Although one thing I'll point out about having our email and phone number is that if they remove the phone from my room, that will be okay with me. Nobody answers the phone anymore.
It's true.
It's just not a thing.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to want to do is send an email and then be patient with getting a response.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get any emails?
I get tons of emails. What do you mean? Of course. I get tons of emails. And like I said before, they range anywhere from like a one-liner text message to, you know, a big paragraph. And it doesn't have to be huge, but if you just simply, you know, address it as if you were talking with somebody, because I'm not your buddy.
Yeah.
I know I'm super cool and everybody wants to hang out with me, but I'm actually not your friend. I am your advisor. And so I expect to be treated like that.
So a little professionalism in the email is nice. And also keep in mind that if you're getting 300 emails a day, if I'm getting 300 emails a day, I'm not going to respond in 15 minutes.
No.
And so a good rule of thumb is to wait 24 hours, you know, maybe 2 days. And if I haven't responded within 3 or 4 days, then email again.
Yeah.
Because it may have gotten buried.
And that's what I usually tell students when I say, when you're reaching out to a faculty member for a question about something or possibly faculty advising, I would say, wait 3 to 5 days. If you have not heard from them in 3 to 5 days, it's not because they don't like you.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. They get 1,000 emails a day and things kind of fall through the cracks. If you reply back to that email and say, hey, I know you're really busy, but I was thinking of possibly meeting with you for faculty advising. Could that happen?
Yeah.
And that kind of puts you back on their radar again, but you're not incessantly emailing them expecting an answer within the hour because today is go, go, go. I need an answer now, now, now. But it doesn't work that way with email.
I once had 30,000 unread emails. I have a bad habit of not unsubscribing things.
Not surprised.
So, yeah. I will absolutely miss your email sometimes, depending on what's going on in other areas of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not personal. And so just email back, and almost always you'll get a reply. Another thing I think you should think about for emails is to think about the subject line. You know, if you're emailing about a class,
that's a good one.
Put the class that you're in.
Yeah.
You know, because when someone says, hey, why did I get a B on that test? Period. You know, Jason. It's like, what? I have
what
to look
class?
You up
yeah.
to even figure out what class you're in.
Yeah.
And so if you put the class that you're in, that does a great service to, you know, making a faster reply.
Mm-hmm.
Other things might go in the subject line, like looking for research opportunity. Can you respond to this? You know, anything that makes me realize why you're emailing is a great help.
And that allows you to figure out priority wise. There are some things that are like red flags. I need to address this fire now. And then there's other ones that I'll get to it at the end of the day. It's not necessarily pressing, or I need to find out some more information before I get back to this student. So that's great. The subject line is great.
And then when you have an attachment, maybe write what the attachment is about and include your name. Don't just put resume or homework. But if it's like, you know, you put your name and homework number 2.
Yes.
Now I know exactly what it is. And it's important that it be in the file name, because when I save, you know, all these things that have come to me, and if they're all just called assignment, I might overwrite them or lose them forever.
Exactly.
And so I really like it. If you, you know, this happens when something wouldn't upload to the course management software correctly, and I say just email it over.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times it doesn't have a name. You know, I used to do that. And then in my old age, I realized that when I email someone something like my resume or my CV or something, put my name on it.
Exactly.
Another thing I would point out is to please make an appointment. Use your email to make an appointment. If you just stop by to see me, I'm probably not here. You know, and I don't know that students realize that I'm not like a physician that just sits in the office all day. And to be honest, even physicians don't do that. You know, they have certain clinic days. They have different offices that they practice at.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can never expect to just show up and then we're sitting right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's office hours, maybe. But even then, it's really smart to make an appointment, because if you made an appointment and other people come, I'm talking to you first. And so make an appointment, send an email. And then this is kind of an advanced thing, but if it's an important meeting, if you're asking me for something like, can I do an honors thesis, or can I be, do you know of any jobs around here, or what internship should I do? If you dress up a little bit, that, I mean, not ridiculous, but like business casual, that goes a long way.
Okay.
And I don't know what you would say about that.
No, I completely agree. If you are wanting someone to do something for you, take it a little bit seriously. Flip-flops, not so much. You know, dirty, you know, sweat-stained t-shirt, not so much. You don't have to wear a three-piece suit. But I would say dress for the part that you want.
Oh, I like that. Dress for the part that you want. And also think about impression management. You know, I'm reminded of a time that my college roommate needed to go talk to financial aid. And this is way back in the day. He would dress up in a three-piece suit and bring a briefcase.
Oh, wow.
Because he wanted to make it look like I have to be taken seriously.
Oh, wow.
Because you've made mistakes on my financial aid and I'm here looking important.
There you go.
And so I thought that was good. And that was the part that he wanted, was please fix this problem.
Yeah. Please take me seriously enough to fix this problem.
And when you come to class, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You can dress however you want. I remember one St. Patrick's Day, people were showing up wearing like green sequin, weird costumes. And I'm like, okay, it's 9:15 in the morning.
They're starting early.
I know. Kegs and eggs. But so there's different contexts, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter at some places. But when you're meeting with someone that you want something, dress the part.
Sure. Just real quickly, when we're talking about sending emails and even meeting with somebody in person, I would always say call them by their earned title.
Ooh, good point.
So if you're dealing with a faculty member, they've gotten their PhD, they've gotten their doctorate, they are Dr. So-and-so, until they tell you, no, just call me Joel.
Yeah.
Or just call me Jeff. Then you take your cues from them, but always err on the side of caution. You always address them by their earned title. So they worked a long time for it, and it is something that it's a badge of honor. Some people care, some people don't, but I'll take your cues from them.
The professors that don't care will tell you.
Yes.
In class, they'll say, just call me Joel.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that care won't tell you.
That's right. They'll never breathe a word about it. And the thing is, it's the same for me. Even though I'm working with people here, I allow them to tell me what they want me to call. So when I first started, everyone was Dr. So-and-so. And over time, everyone addressed me by saying, no, just call me, you know, by my first name or whatever.
But then there
are some faculty that never told me any different. And I still address them by their earned title.
And yeah, that makes sense. And as a psychologist, again, I'm thinking everything through the psychology lens.
Mm.
And it's making me feel like if someone says, just call me Joel, there's like an acknowledgement of a relationship. And so probably now that's a warmer relationship than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is actually a good kind of a social game that we play for you to, you know, treat everybody with respect. And like, you know, if someone to call you Miss Aurora at first, and then you say, oh, no, just Aurora. You know, that's nice. Actually, no, it was Miss Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm remembering my days in the South where everybody was aunt and uncle.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, are they related to you? No, we just call everyone.
It's out of respect.
Yeah, especially little children at daycare. Everybody was auntie.
Exactly. And that goes back to knowing your audience. Who am I addressing? I will tell you, I had one student a few years back that was requesting faculty advising from one of our faculty members. And the email was so unprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
It was as if she addressed that person by their first name. She didn't know them. And it was kind of like, text me back if you want to, you know, meet up for lunch or something. Like, and so this person actually name dropped me, saying Aurora Alexander said that I could reach out to you for faculty advising. That faculty member then forwarded that email to me and said, whoa, you need to have a conversation with students. And awkward. So that's the thing, even though, again, I don't get paid on this. This, my paycheck doesn't depend, thank God, on whether students are professional or not, but it lands in my lap because I'm making professional references and saying, you know, reach out to this person, suggesting resources for them. And
who are you going to recommend for a new opening? You know, the people that show up and they have a notepad and they're taking notes and they have a list of questions and they're, you know, thoughtful and their phone is turned off, mm-hmm. you know, or the people that just wander around. So
clueless.
Yeah. And send you the emails that don't even have a subject line or a name.
Yeah. No student ID, no nothing. Hit me back when you can. Peace out. You know, things like that.
And to be honest, those are the minority. You know,
they are the minority.
Most people get it. And the reason that we're even having this conversation today is because we said we would tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the truth is that professionalism pays. It really, really does.
Yeah.
And to be honest, most people won't tell you when you're being unprofessional.
No, they won't tell you. But magically, you just won't get any phone calls returned. You won't get any emails returned. And I never want a student to graduate and then be in their mid-30s, early 40s. And for some reason, they're getting passed up on job opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they're jerks, you know, or people view them as being jerky-like because they're not professional.
Yeah, I'm going to even suggest that sometimes people are oblivious because our culture's forms of communication have become more informal. And so we're living in the era of everybody texts everybody and the grammar's not there. And so it may be just that you didn't realize that there should be a subject line, there should be a salutation, there should be a signature at the end of the email.
Absolutely.
It should have complete sentences, you know, and be brief, you know, don't write me six pages, but but it should be concise and make sense. And it's not because people are being uptight. It's because you can't control impression management unless you pay attention to these things. Mm-hmm. And in terms of professionalism paying, you know, when you think about it, college is very expensive and you're paying a lot to go to college or the government or your parents or someone.
Someone's footing the bill.
This is not free.
Mm-hmm.
And having the incredibly valuable resource of a professor or a staff person, you know, an advisor, the director of the Career Services Center, people that you know that give you what you want. You know, these are people that have resources.
Yeah.
They know about opportunities. They know about openings. They know about how to apply to graduate school. Or, I mean, they know so much. And they're here for a reason, you know. Their favorite thing is for their students to succeed.
Yeah.
And whether or not they're thinking about it, they're going to be funneling more resources to the students that are being respectful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a two-way street. They want to respect you, and you want to respect them. So professionalism, I think, is one of those you know, secret sauces that can really, really make for a better college experience.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be all the time. It has to be in the presence of the right audience when you want something, you know, and I think that you see it the most with people interacting with staff that they don't think they have to be polite, you know, but just bring your polite self and your professional self to all of your interactions where there's something that you need or that you want. And it just goes so much better.
Right.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.